Chapter 11. When I got home, I was shocked to see Marina waiting for me. "I've been trying to get a hold of you," she said. I saw the car parked in the driveway. Her mom was pushing her dad in a wheelchair. They were talking to my parents. "What's going on?" I asked. "My mom was mad at you at first. She thought it was you who got me into trouble, but I convinced her it was the other way around. It was different with my father. He likes you. In his eyes, you can do no wrong. In fact, he got back on the phone to the lab to ask for some more information. It was good to see him wanting to get involved. I think you've been a good influence on him." "Me?" I asked. "Yeah, I had you figured all wrong from the start. First impressions don't always hold up." "I'm glad," I said, and I handed her the pages of the report I had copied. "Take a look at this when you get home. I have a feeling that some of this might come in handy sometime soon." All of the adults were headed our way now. I stashed my papers inside my jacket, and Marina put her copies into the back seat of their car. It was going to be one of those weird scenes with Marina's parents and my parents all together, and everybody trying to be dopey polite. I could see now that Mr. Ryson was carrying Jack. He had on a pair of heavy gloves and was holding Jack in his lap. The guy still looked pretty awful. His skin had a pale white color to it, and he seemed to be having a hard time breathing. I knew that whatever it was that brought him here must have been a pretty big deal. My own parents stayed in the background as Marina's mom rolled Mr. Ryerson up to me. I noticed his eyes first. For now, the pain seemed to be gone. There was a kind of fire there, a spark that I hadn't seen before. "Chris, I hope you don't mind this, but I got to thinking about old Jack here. He and I have become pretty good friends in the past few days. Not that he's always easy to get along with, mind you, but I respect that. He's a wild creature. Chris is always bringing home some poor injured animal ever since I can remember," Mom said, trying to make small talk. Mrs. Ryson smiled at her, "always some poor thing out there in need for help." Mr. Ryerson wasn't paying any attention to their talk. "Grab these other gloves here in my chair," he told me. I put them on, and he handed Jack to me to hold. The first thing Jack did was take a big, powerful bite into the glove, but I held on to him. Then Mr. Ryson reached into a bag on the side of his wheelchair and brought out a box. He opened the box and pulled out this strange mechanical contraption. He held it up in front of him, waiting for me to clue in. "You were the one to find Jack. I didn't want to do this without your permission, but I thought about this day and night. I studied what was left on the stump of Jack's wing. Not much, but he still seems to have muscular control, so I made this. I couldn't make a head or tail of it. Straps, thin aluminum tubes hinged together, and a piece of Dacron that looked like it had come off a windsurfer sail. I looked at Marina. She said, a great big grin on her face. "It's a wing," Marina said. My parents looked at each other like they had just discovered they were in the midst of a bunch of lunatics. I think it was wrong about a bird being able to live on the water without being able to fly. Mr. Ryson said, "So I made this. It's a long shot. It might not work, or if it works, Jack could get hurt. It was just an idea, but now it's up to you." I didn't quite know what to say. "I've made a padded fitting here so it will go over the stump snug but gently. Then we attach the straps around his body so as not to interfere with his good wing. When the wing pushes against the artificial wing, it will stretch out just so when he lands, it will close up thanks to a little string loading device. It'll be awkward as hell, sure, but it will give him a chance to fly." "It's wild," I said, smiling. "I love the idea. It was the sort of thing I would have wanted to do myself, only I wouldn't have to know how to do it." "It's a gamble," Mr. Ryson reminded me. "We might not be doing Jack any favors. I thought about what it must feel like to be a bird up in the sky, flying every day of your life, and then what it must feel like to be shot down out of the sky and not have any understanding of what happened to you. I thought about how unhappy Jack was in the cage. What if it was me? I asked myself. I looked at Marina. I say we give it a try. Good, her father said. You hold him still. I'll fit the wing. I've checked the healing. Birds heal very quickly. I don't think this will hurt him. So as Jack clamped down again on my glove, Mr. Reerson, with great concentration and a lot of gasping, harnessed Jack into his new wing. It was folded in two at first, and it looked totally absurd. Mr. Reerson sat back down in his wheelchair and caught his breath when he was through. Cautious at first, let's do this one step at a time, he said. I set Jack down on the grass near the shoreline, ever so gently. At first, Jack stood there. He looked around at us. I swear he looked each one of us directly in the eyes. Then he stretched out his good wing tentatively. He started to flap it and fell over sideways from the weight of the contraption on his other side. But he got right back up. I looked at Dad, and he was shaking his head sideways. No, he was trying to tell me it isn't going to work. The creep. Wasn't that just like him, ready to give up, ready to admit defeat before Jack had a real chance? I clenched my fists just then, but said nothing. Jack was getting himself back under control. He started to flap away with his good wing again. This time, he must have been remembering what it was like in an old days before the artificial wing began to jiggle about. Then, as the wind under it began to work, it unfolded and stretched out to its full length, perfectly as long as his real wing. Mr. Reerson was bent forward. Come on, come on, you can do it, he said. I was holding my breath. Jack was flapping and flapping, and both wings were moving up and down, beating against the ground. I could feel the power of the bird as the wind spit out from underneath him. Then he just stopped, and I thought that maybe he had given up, that it had been a really dumb idea, just like my old man thought. But instead, Jack started again, flapping and flapping and lifting his feet until he was just barely off the ground. He let out one of his famous shrieks and pounded away at the ground with both his wings until he was spinning around in a circle but going nowhere. I didn't know just then if I was watching something magnificent or something pathetic. The loser in me said it was a bad joke. A nice try, but a bad joke. The dreamer in me told the bird to forget about gravity and get his ass off and flying. Please, please, I heard Mrs. Reerson say as the bird kept spinning around in a kind of frenzy. You can do it, Jack, my mom said now. Yeah, you can do it, Marina repeated. I knew enough about flying to realize that Jack was going to take off under such difficult circumstances. He'd have to be facing straight into the wind, not spinning around in a circle. Time to take another chance. Jack was watching me, watching all of us as he beat his wings against the ground. It could be a mistake to scare him at a time like this, but birds respond instinctively. I'd have to take the chance that his instincts were still good. I walked quickly a couple steps forward towards him and clapped my hands loudly. He stopped his spinning frenzy and began to stumble, to run away from me towards the harbor, into the wind. As he ran, his wings began to flap again, this time with even more strength than before. His feet came up, his wings still smacked the ground, but he was moving fast. And as the ground dropped away near the shoreline, Jack's wings, one gray and one polyester blue, began to work the air. He skimmed the water, but he lifted slowly but surely, wobbling a bit, faltering, then readjusting. But the bird was flying. I don't believe it, my father said, but he grabbed onto my mom and gave her a big hug. then jumped up and down and let out a hoot like a little kid. I watched as Jack circled around in front of us, faltering again, trying to adjust to the wind, but seeming to relearn with every move. Test, adjust, compensate. I could see from Mr. Rearson's face that I was not just looking at a man with cancer stuck in a wheelchair. I was looking at a man who had wings. We watched Jack fly around and around. I was afraid now that Jack might just take off and fly away for good. We all knew that his artificial wing was by no means permanent. Out of the wild, it wouldn't last. If he came back, if he could just adjust to domestic life, the wing would be something that he could strap on to let him fly now and again. But I decided that if he didn't come back, maybe that was the way it would have to be. Jack's one last flight might be better than a life in a cage on the ground. As we shielded our eyes against the sun and stared hard into the sky to keep up with the flight, my father retreated to the house and came out with a bag of frozen cod heads and gutted whole mackerel, Jack's gourmet meal. My father was a believer again. He walked to the shore and held up one of the mackerel. Minutes passed and I thought we had already lost Jack. Dad stood there like a crazy man holding a dead fish up to an empty sky. Then, suddenly, a big, gaudy, insane-looking creature swooped down over us from behind the house, snatched the fish out of my father's hand, and landed on the water in front of us. The wing had folded as designed, but caused him to sit a little lopsided in the harbor. Jack took no time in wolfing down the entire fish, bones and all, as was his habit. When he was finished, he ducked under the water a couple of times and then paddled ashore. His new wing was dragging a bit as he waddled up over the rocks past my old man and directly up to Mr. Rearson. He came within a meter and then just stood there looking at him. Mrs. Rearson had a handkerchief up to her face and was trying not to make any noise as she blubbered. Mr. Rearson was looking at Jack. "It worked," he said to the bird. "For once, it worked." Jack didn't seem to be paying any attention. He stood perfectly still and lifted himself up on one foot, a seagull's at rest position.